Welcome back to Alive at 5. I'm your host, David Leonard, and it's my pleasure to welcome the program here this afternoon, Dominic Maglio. Dominic is the author of a book entitled In Charge Parenting in a PC Nation. I wanted him to come on the program today and discuss with us his approach to parenting, why he felt the need to write this book, and to be frank, in his point of view, what so many parents are getting wrong and what they could be getting right these days. Good afternoon, Dominic, and welcome aboard.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for making some time for me here. At the beginning, for a listener out there that may not be familiar with you, if you'd be so kind, tell us a little bit about yourself. Who is Dominic Maglio?
Okay. I'm a person that's had various experiences with children in many different settings. I have been a clinical psychologist working with families for years, over 47 years. And so I've seen children from that vantage point as a family counselor. I've also, I have a college preparatory school now for over 33 years, and I see every day parents and children. I have worked as a teacher. I have worked in school for disturbed children. I have 11 grandchildren, 4 children. I have been in the trenches on many different levels. I've worked with the Eckerd Foundation with children that are delinquent. So I've seen children from all angles. But what I've been seeing over the years is a letdown in the responsibility of being a parent. The parents today don't want to be in charge. They want their children to like them, best friends forever kind of deal. And by doing that, they relinquish their authority and the respect that they have to have in order to tell children, their children, no sometimes because they make bad decisions. So my whole point in the PC Nation is we have to stop being PC with children. They're youngsters. They know very little about the world. They have no idea, what's in front of them. They have no indication of what's going to happen. They have to be taught. There's a Mayan statement, take them to the top of the mountains and let them see what's below them. And I think there is a tremendous amount of wisdom in that. It's your job as a parent to kind of help the child realize what's going down and coming down the road, and so that they can be prepared for the eventuality of this happening or that happening. But they have to listen. That's a big problem today. Children are being diagnosed with all sorts of labels, being drugged into submission. And really what it is, they don't listen very well. And the reason they don't listen, parents don't demand that they listen. And then when they speak, they don't speak with authority. They let the children interrupt. They have like a debate rather than a straightforward, this is what's going to happen, and you need to do this, this, and this. So there's a lot of things that are taking place in child rearing that are very, very counterproductive.
In charge parenting, one of the things that I thought of when I heard that phrase, and you mentioned it yourself, Dominic, is that many parents don't want to be in charge. Being in charge as a parent is something that is a conscious choice that parents have to make, isn't it?
Well, what do you mean exactly?
Well, that is something that they have to choose to do. They have to work towards that goal.
It used to be fairly instinctual to be in charge. That was your responsibility. And what's happened, it's been undermined. It's been undermined by the psychological pop culture experts that, and it goes all the way back to Spock, where, in his socialistic mentality, he wanted everybody to be equal, to be on the same level. There would be no authoritarian control. And look what's happened. It doesn't work. Hasn't worked. It's getting worse and worse because people have been raised that way now, and they are bringing children up under that philosophy, and they don't even have the slightest idea what it is to be in control. So very few parents have had examples of their parents being in control. This is generational now. So if you don't know that you're supposed to be in control and you don't feel responsible to be in control, then I guess you're going to just see your children as passing friends. And they're not friends. They're your own flesh and blood.
Let's define our terms here today, then. When you use the phrase in-charge parenting, Dominic, what is it that you're referring to? What do you mean by that exactly?
What I mean in-charge parenting is the children listen when you speak and tell them what to do. You give them information. You explain to them, this is what's going to happen at a certain time. If you're going to do your homework, it's going to be done at such and such a time, and then the parent has to follow through and make sure it happens. I mean, there has to be somebody in charge. It's like in any organization, any group, a volunteer group gets together. Sooner or later, somebody comes, and he takes or she takes charge of it, because there's got to be a leader. You can't, as Obama taught us, can't lead from behind. Then you're not leading, because leading means in front, just by definition. So if you are the parent, you have to lead from the front, not just let the children do whatever they feel like doing and then just kind of monitor, whether you are improving or not improving. You have to be in charge.
One of the things I thought was very interesting was the first chapter of your book is entitled Parenting in an Upside Down World. And I thought that was a really interesting title for the first chapter in your book. Why is this, and why do you say that we live in an upside down world, or that parents live in an upside down world?
Because everything is the opposite of the traditional values that has made America great. Parents realize that there's a finite time for your life with your children, and they would devote that time to raising children. And now there's mixed into that, there's socializing, that there is social networking, there's career, there's all sorts of other things that kind of take either equal or preference to raising children. And, the way we rationalize it is that we say, oh, professionals are doing it for us. I can take them to this studio or that studio, and they're getting all this help. But the parents themselves are not directly involved in that the entire socialization process. So it's an upside-down time. The children have all these authority figures. They don't know how to play amongst themselves and organize themselves. They have these authority figures telling them what to do, if it's dance, gymnastics, and whatnot. And that's all fine and dandy. But then they have very little time with their parents in order to learn what they used to call common sense, they used to call, organizational skills, get time management, all these things that they don't seem to be getting the experiences and the responsibility to do. So it's an upside down world right now, where the children are in control a lot of times of the family. That's upside down.
One of the things I think I hear you saying today, Dominic, is that there's no substitute for having not just a parent, but having an effective parent, or effective parents, I should say, in a child's life. Am I getting that right?
Absolutely. I mean, the parents are your entry into the real world, into civilization. And if the parents are not doing it, then what happens is the child is kind of without a compass. And that's another thing. We parents used to teach morals, right, wrong. They used to say, oh, my child lies, and then corrected. They knew their children. The families were a little bit, they're not just single children. They had more than one or two children. They had families. And therefore, they would learn from one child doing something. They would learn about their other child and whatnot. Now, a lot of times, that's not the case. And the parents are more protective of the children than they are concerned about the children being on the straight and narrow. So that's another part of it that's so confusing and upside down. They are their advocates for their children rather than the ones that are sitting on them and telling them, this is how you do it, this is what you got to do, this is, you know, you need to get it done by this thing. They're not in charge, and they're not overlooking the child and making sure they do things right.
In the third chapter of your book, you talk about purposeful discipline, the 8 steps of purposeful discipline. I wanted to spend some time with you on that aspect of this today. And so fill me in. When you think about the 8 steps of purposeful discipline, what is it that you're speaking about?
What I'm speaking about, you know, in terms of understanding discipline is love. Love is discipline. When you're trying to get a child to kind of learn the you know, what's right and what's wrong, you need to spend time doing it. It just is not something, oh, you just, you know, grab the cat by the head and just yanked him. They have to understand the steps and what they did, and they have to respect the role model, which is the parent. And when you go through these steps, what happens is that you tell them, if you do that again, or, you know, this is what's going to happen. You yank the cat, it hurts the cat. You do it again, then you're going to sit out, or you're not going to, whatever it is that you're going to do. And then it happens, you administer what you said you were going to do, then you talk to them about it. Well, why, instead of them getting mad at you, they need to understand that they're the ones that cause their own grief by doing that particular behavior. And so you explain, do you see, why am I punishing you? And they have to give you a reason. They have to give you the reason that you are doing it, rather than I don't know. You know, they need to explain, well, the reason is because I shouldn't have, you know, hurt the cat. And then by giving you a reason, then they're not going to take their anger out on the parent for doing what the parent is responsible to do. And I think that's the biggest thing. A lot of times we cut the whole process short by, you know, getting angry at the child, but not explaining what, or have them explain to you why what they did was wrong. Because they got to understand the moral lessons, or then they're going to do it, you know, they're going to just continue that behavior. They have to accept it in their being that's wrong to hurt another, you know, animal, or it's wrong to tell a lie. And instead, a lot of the parents are saying, oh, my child doesn't lie. And there is no child that doesn't lie. I mean, that's absurd. There's no person that doesn't lie. We all lie sometimes, and the trouble is, if you learn how that lying is wrong, you work at not lying. It's much easier to lie than not to lie. So these 8 steps basically let them anticipate, here's what's going to happen if you do that. Then afterwards, you debrief them and you say, what happened? And this is what happened. And this way, they see the logic to it.
I'm visiting this afternoon with Dominic Maglio. Dominic is the author of a book entitled In Charge Parenting in a PC World. What I hear you saying there is that there, just as there's no substitute for an effective parent or parents in a child's life, there's certainly no substitute for consistency regarding discipline. I mean, as you're pointing out, you know, kids hear one thing one time and then something else the next, and the consequences are not definite, the lessons are not going to be learned.
Exactly.
Is there a place, Dominic, is there a place in a child's discipline for spanking?
Absolutely. And this is one of the things, the book talks about moderate spanking. There have been studies, and what the elites like you to think about when they say, you know, banking is detrimental. Okay, they're talking about absolute abuse. I mean, if you abuse your child and you spank him because you want to get your jollies, or you're spanking him because you're just so angry, you're not controlling yourself, that's abuse. But when you spank a child on the behind for doing something wrong and letting them know no with that spank, so they understand that the no means no, or it's going to follow by some little pain, then it's a very, very acceptable and preferred way of getting children to inhibit behavior. So anyway, Elizabeth Owens from the University of Berkeley in California, not a beacon of conservatism, or it's one of the most liberal colleges in the country. They did a study, a longitudinal study, 100 kids, and over 10 years, and what happened was they found that moderate spanking has no ill effect on the social, emotional development, psychological development of a child. So it depends on the degree of the spanking. And I am definitely not in favor of abuse, but I am totally in favor of getting children to kind of understand that there's a physical consequence sometimes if they are going to be totally disruptive and harmful to themselves and others.
One of the things you did is you closed the book out. Chapter 7 is a quiz on in-charge parenting. And I thought that was interesting that you included that in the book. Dominic, why did you have that, make sure that quiz was included in your book?
In order to wake people up that, you know, everyone seems to be an expert on how to raise their children. They just think, well, whatever they do is the right way of doing it. And they need to kind of look at a more objective way of looking at it rather than just their only subjective feelings, oh, I'm doing a great job. And if the children, are not doing certain things for themselves, then the parent has to take stock of it and say, wait a second, maybe I should have done this rather than that. I think elders who would kind of let us know, well, this is what has worked in the past for me or for, you know, generations. And you would be able to gauge your own work against some sort of a history of what does work. So I think that's gone, and the book hopefully is trying to bring some of that back so that people can say, yes, if they have to do certain things at a certain age, you can't just... Look, so many of these children today, they're not talking at a normal age. First of all, because they don't need to use words. Nobody, you know, works with them and says, okay, you want this? You know, this is water. Say water. Nobody's working with them in order to help develop their vocabulary or help them, just basically be aware that they have to do certain things in order to be appropriate. And that's getting a lot of children labeled for the basically for the lack of parenting skills that their parents have, not because of them. They have the speech ability, but it's not being rehearsed and practiced and brought to the forefront.
Would you say that there'd be a value for parents in taking that quiz more than once?
I think that, if you look back at the questions and you see which ones you get wrong, then it maybe that would be very helpful for you to change some of the methods that you're using. Instead of, giving false esteem, it's not... People think that if you say to your child, oh, that's not very good, you can do a better job, that's cruel and unusual. You take it and, if the child gives you something that you think is worthless or they didn't try, to say, go back and do it over again, whatever it is, rake the leaves, they're not doing a good job, they have to do it over, you spread them out there. You let them, maybe suffer a little bit to get to the point where this is the way it's supposed to be done, and that's what I expect. And, you know, not having those lessons where you have consequences for not doing something right, children go about doing, you know, like washing windows. They don't even know how to wash a window because no one has demanded they learn how to do it correctly and do it efficiently. So all these tasks that used to be part of contributing to the family, they're going by the wayside. There's nobody teaching them how to do it and demanding of them that they contribute. So they become very dysfunctional when they become parents. They really don't do any of that stuff either. So they didn't do it as children. Now they're not going to do it. And the children are moving further away from being taught how they, on their own, are going to be, you know, able to survive.
Over the years, we've seen an explosion, I guess would be the word that I would choose to use, an explosion in the diagnosis of children with different psychiatric disorders, and also an explosion as well in the use of pretty powerful psychotropic medications with these young people. Do you have concerns about that?
I have had concerns for 50 years about that. I remember coming out of undergraduate school in 67, and Ritalin at that point was banned in Sweden. And, you know, we use so much of that now. I mean, we use so many other drugs as well. Yeah, that you're not teaching. I refuse, as an educator in my college forever, to take any kids on drugs. You want them to come to my school, you have to take them off drugs. Because I want to see what they are like without drugs. Because they're not going to function. That's not how they're going to function with drugs and be as effective as they need to. They have emotional issues. They haven't learned how to deal with certain things. Well, they're not going to learn it if they're on drugs. So you have to get them off, and you have to work with them, and you have to make them human beings without drugs. So, it's a cop-out. What it is, to appease parents, instead of saying, you know, you're doing a really crummy job, your kid's not trained in this, this, and that, the parents are left alone no matter what, how poorly they're doing. And the children are labeled and drugged into submission. And this is kind of, I think, really, you're talking about amazing abuse. It's psychological abuse. And I find it, I've watched it happen. When I was, coming out of graduate school, there was very few classifications for childhood disorders. Now there's a ton of them. And they keep on growing. And people keep on making money, looking at the child and giving them a label and then getting them on drugs. It's not in the best interest of the child.
Dominic, if somebody were to pick up a copy of your book and read it and then set it down and they walked away, and when they walked away, they only came away with one idea from having read your book, what would you want that to be?
That being a parent is a sacred duty.
Explain that. When you say a sacred duty, what do you mean?
I mean, it's the one thing in life that if you do well, you're going to leave a great legacy. I mean, it's not as if you can just have no impact on a child. You're going to have either good impact or a very bad one. And if you have a bad one, your legacy is going to be horrible. If you do a great job with that person, that young person, who knows who they're going to become? They can affect the world in so many positive ways. God doesn't give everybody a child. And when they do, you know, when you have a child, it's your responsibility to do the best job you can.
I couldn't put it much better than that. Dominic, it's been an interesting conversation with you here today. If we have a listener out there that would like to be able to get a copy of your book or take a look at your website, how can they go about doing that?
Okay, they can do, my website is drmaglio.com. I have another website, which is inchargeparenting.com. they can go on my blogs. I'm quite a bit on the internet. They can get my book at Amazon or Google if they would like to. And I don't anything else that I can help with.
Dominic, I want to take a moment now to thank you for having spent some time with us here today. We've appreciated hearing from you.
Well, thank you very much for having me. Appreciate it.
That's Dominic Maglio joining me here this afternoon on Alive at 5. He is the author of In Charge Parenting in a PC Nation. Keep it tuned right here to Yankton's home team, AM 1450 KYNT. We'll be right back after this.